With the 14th, 15th pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA.
Every athlete has a journey. Focus on the game. Let us worry about getting you there. Auto repair, roadside assistance, and auto insurance. Start your journey at AAA.com. A week from now, the center of the NFL universe will be Indianapolis, Indiana, the site of the 2017 NFL Scouting Combine. Welcome to the Journey to Draft podcast presented by AAA. I'm Chris McPherson, joined alongside Alex Smith,
C-Mac,
as well as Fran Duffy.
Gentlemen.
Gentlemen, you excited? This is really when things start to ramp up.
I'm always ramped up, so this is not, everybody else is kind of catching up to me. It's a very exciting time, though. Very, very exciting time.
It's nice when everyone else gets to Fran's level that he's at for 365 days a year.
Yes.
It's funny because they say there are risers in the draft process, and it's really just everyone else catching up to the evaluations that teams have. I think that's what we're getting to with Fran right now, is Fran's always at the highest level, and we're trying to get that point. Now, for those of you listening for the first time, yes, this is a draft podcast, but it is with an Eagle slant. Still, there's plenty of information when it comes to prospects for fans of any team. We'll get into the latest breaking news in our Draft Buzz segment before our pick six, which this week highlights small school prospects. Our Mr. Relevant this week is none other than the esteemed Charles Davis from NFL Network. He knows the Eagles from his analyst work for Fox and is also the voice of the Madden video game series. So we're going to transition now into Draft Buzz.
Now it's time for Draft Buzz.
To kick things off here on Draft Buzz, wide receiver John Ross out of Washington told Emily Kaplan from the MMQB that he ran a 4.3-second laser-timed 40 during workouts on campus.
Well, it was a great piece that Emily wrote on Ross for the MMQB. Just if you want to learn more about him, and a lot of people have made that connection to DeSean Jackson from a physical skill set standpoint. Not really surprising to see that DeSean actually worked with Ross last year around this time in the offseason as Ross prepared for his junior year. The 4.3 flat laser time is obviously very, very impressive. That's the kind of speed he shows off on film. That would be one of the fastest times we've seen at the combine in recent memory, especially from a laser standpoint. The 4.36 laser time would be in the 90th percentile. So he would be like upper echelon of receivers drafted in the last 5 years in terms of raw speed. And he's a very skilled prospect as well in terms of his route running and releases. So really interesting prospect, really interesting name.
Yeah, I think John Ross is kind of slated in right now as that third wide receiver behind Corey Davis and Mike Williams, whatever order you want to put those two guys in. But my question to you guys is, if he goes out and he tears up the combine, runs a 4.3, whatever it is, you know, puts his name out there, could he be in the top? Could he move into the top two?
I will start with this. To me, it will show what you already see on tape. You see the blazing speed. You see the skill set that can transition to the pro game. He can score in the red zone, which most people think that he can only take a top off a defense. No, he can score within the 20. Very good route runner. Very good at getting off the line of scrimmage. The medical. That's the big question for me. And we saw the piece by Kaplan. It was a phenomenal piece, like you said, Fran. And we all debated it, and we all said, at the end of the day, yes, this makes him look great from a character standpoint. Props to his agent for getting this kind of piece out there. But also, at the end of the day, what is his medical report going to look like?
That's you took the words out of my mouth. I mean, that's, to me, you already know if you're naming John Ross's best traits, speed is one of the first things on the list. You can't give him the mark twice because he goes to the combine and runs a 4.3. So to me, it's, okay, he has great speed. If he goes to the combine and runs a 4.3, great, you're checking that box, but you already knew that. To me, it's more of a story if he goes and he runs a 4.48. Then you're like, all right, what's the deal with that? But to me, no, I don't think you're boosting him because of that. What you're really hoping is that his knees check out.
Indeed. Fran, you did your combine preview of the wide receivers, which you can read on PhiladelphiaEagles.com and the Eagles mobile app. You have Corey Davis as a top pick in this class.
Number one. To me, you could go with Williams or Davis. Both are great players. I think Ross is a great player as well. To me, I like Davis a little bit more because I think he's a little bit more ready-made out of the box. You know, I think Williams certainly presents a physical skill set and the ability to go up and win those contested catches that Davis can do, but that's not necessarily the strength of his game. Whereas Davis, you can see him separating with technique at an NFL level. in college football, which is not really a common thing. We said that about Amari Cooper a couple years ago coming out of Alabama, that not only was he a great physical talent, but also a very skilled route runner. That's kind of where Davis is as well.
What's Corey Davis's medical background? Because with both Williams and John Ross, you know, both of those guys have had injury concerns in the past. So is this a case where Corey Davis kind of has, you know, the cleanest bill of health out of those guys, and that could elevate him as well?
He missed exactly one game in his college career back in 2013. Then he missed the Senior Bowl because of a supposed shoulder injury. And so you can debate whether or not that was, you know, true, or if it was kind of like it was a sore shoulder and he just didn't want to go down. And then obviously he suffered the ankle injury during training for the combine that needed surgery. So he will miss next week's combine. Apparently he will be ready for mini camp in the late spring, but it doesn't sound like he's going to be doing any kind of pro days or athletic testing.
That's the one thing, is he will not be participating in the combine drills, so he can't set himself apart like John Ross and Mike Williams.
Which is unfortunate.
We'll be able to. Our next item here comes from Daniel Jeremiah of NFL Network. He says that Florida State returner receiver Kermit Whitfield actually has the best chance to break Chris Johnson's record of 4.24 seconds in the 40-yard dash. John Ross, just to let you know, came in number two on his list.
Scouts had Whitfield at like a mid 4.4 in the preseason, and he ran a 4.37 stopwatch time in high school. So he's got speed, and he was a great kick returner at Florida State. Undersized, he's under 5'8". He's smaller than even John Ross is. So that's going to be an issue for him. But yeah, he's an explosive kid. Probably one of the top two or three explosive talents in this draft.
Yeah, he definitely has the speed, and I saw him down at the Shrine Game this year. I kind of wish I would have saw a little bit more from him in terms of as a wide receiver. I thought he had some issues with route running and holding on to the ball and things like that. But I think his role at the next level isn't going to be as much as a slot receiver, but it will be as a kick returner. And he certainly has the speed for that. So let's see what he can do in Indy.
I do think he can play that role that Josh Huff was for the Eagles early last year before he left the team. He can be that fourth receiver, a kick returner. I think he shows effort as a blocker. I think he can do a lot of those things.
All right, our next item comes from our good friend Tony Pauline from DraftAnalyst.com. He said that he sees Forrest Lamp, a likely top 50 selection in this year's draft, making the transition from tackle to center, just like Kansas State's Cody Whitehair did a year ago for the Chicago Bears.
And I think he said that he had heard also in the same piece that there's a chance he could go early round one, which is really, really intriguing from a, you know, just from a draft slot perspective. There's a number of guards in this class. I've gone on record, I've said a couple times, I think this guard group is pretty good. We said that last year, that the guard group was very good. The Eagles were able to get Isaac Seumalo out of that group. I think that this group is close. It's not quite there in terms of the depth, but you know, when you're talking about a guy like Forrest Lamp, he played tackle throughout his career. And from an Eagles respect, went to the same high school, worked with the same coaches as Trey Burton. So the same coaches that kind of shepherded Trey Burton towards being a quarterback and a do-everything player and got him to the University of Florida, same guys that put Forrest Lamp on the road to NFL success by having him put on 50 pounds in high school and say, you could be a great offensive lineman. And he became a four-year starter, started 51 games for Western Kentucky.
Yeah, when I saw Lamp at the Senior Bowl, he just looked like a guard to me. I thought that was the best spot for him. He's a pretty big guy, too. You always wonder with centers, with guys who are really tall. Now, Cody Whitehair was obviously able to do it, but I don't know if Lamp is the right body type for center either.
He's got really short arms. You know, he's 6'4", 305, and his arms came in at 31 1/8 inches, which is really short, even for a guard center, interior offensive line prospect. So that's one of the things that I think maybe people point to and say he may have issues even with the longer defensive tackles, maybe shift him more inside the center.
It's interesting, Fran hosts the Eagle Eye and Sky podcast, and your most recent edition, you had a conversation about offensive line play with Jeff Schwartz, former NFL offensive lineman. And you talked about the transition, how in the media, and even some teams will throw out there, oh, so-and-so can make the transition from tackle to guard. You know, oh, Jason Peters might be getting long in the tooth, just move him into guard. It's not that easy, and you're asking someone who played tackle his whole career to make the move to center. Yes, Cody Whitehair was able to do it. We've seen some other guys make that transition in recent years, but it doesn't mean that you can just kind of put a stamp on, oh, just instantly you're going to go from one spot to another.
I remember when I first got here, there was the discussion with Evan Mathis, who had bounced around a little bit from position to position and played both tackle and guard. He had talked about the difficulties he had had from switching from left side to right side and back and forth. Todd Herriman's had those same discussions. I remember last year when everyone talked about Laremy Tunsil and when he got drafted by Miami and he had been a tackle his whole career, and they said, oh, well, we have Brandon Albert, so he's going to play guard. That I was worried about. Now, he ended up being really good, and I think it's just because he's just a freakish talent. But you have to worry because things, as you get closer to the football, things happen faster in the NFL. So you're a tackle, you're on an island. Things don't happen nearly as fast as when you're down in the trenches as a guard or a center. You have all those games in front. It's not an easy projection. So whenever you're talking about whether it's Forrest Lamp or really any of these guys that we're talking about as potential guards that are their play as tackles in the NFL and college football, it's not easy if they've never done it before.
You mentioned that the potential, the possibility that Lamp could go in the first round. Tony Pauline says that Dorian Johnson of Pittsburgh and Dan Feeney of Indiana should definitely go in the first round, probably above where Lamp will be selected. Lamp could be a late first, early second at worst.
I could see that
pick there.
Dorian Johnson is really, really good. I think people like Feeney a little bit more than I do. We saw him down at the Senior Bowl, Alex, and I thought he was good that week. But, yeah, both players I think are getting a lot of buzz right now.
All right. The next item comes from Matt Harmon from Reception Perception, and he has tracked contested catch rates. And he said over the last 2 years, no receiver has had a better contested catch rate than Penn State's Chris Godwin, someone who I had a little man crush on during last week's podcast, an Eagles fan, Middletown, Delaware, if you read Eagles, the wide receiver piece for the combine from Fran. But Chris Godwin beating out Mike Williams, you mentioned that's a big part of his game. But over the last 2 years, Chris Godwin with the best contested catch rate among draft prospects.
That's his calling card. It's like John Ross with his speed. That Chris Godwin's ability to go up and win in those one-on-one situations is as good as anybody. And Matt Harmon does a great job of tracking that stuff for NFL.com and for all the fantasy analysis that he does. Godwin, to me, I want to see him get a little bit better as a route runner, and I think the combine will be very big for him in order to prove what kind of an athlete he is. That would be a thing, like we mentioned, you know, oh, if John Ross runs a 4.3, what will that do? If Chris Godwin were to go to the combine and run like a 4.4 flat, I think people now are talking about him as like a top 50 pick. Whereas if he goes and I think he's more of like a 4.5, like early 4, you know, 4.53, 4.54 guy. To me, then that would say if he were to run well, that would really, really help his stock.
Yeah, I said it a couple weeks on this podcast, and I'll say it again, that every time I watched a Penn State game on TV, it seemed like Chris Godwin caught everything. Didn't matter how crazy a catch it was. Obviously, in the Rose Bowl, which you know we've talked about before, nationally televised game, of course, he had an outstanding game where he made a couple of circus catches like that. I think that's going to go a really long way for him.
All right, we're going to talk about quarterbacks for a second. And now Eagles fans might be like, why are you guys talking quarterbacks? We got Carson Wentz. I got you. But some interesting things here that Eagles fans will want to keep an eye on. This item here comes from NFL.com's Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks on their Move the Sticks podcast that they were told by an NFL scout that former Texas Tech quarterback Pat Mahomes definitely has the tools to be a number one type quarterback in this draft. And furthermore, in an interview with Mike Florio for Pro Football Talk, Mahomes revealed that he received a second round grade from the NFL Draft Advisory Board. This is important because if there are talent evaluators who think that Mahomes could potentially be the best quarterback in this draft class, you're hoping that a team like the Jets in the top 10, the Bears, the Browns, someone up high will take him and then push a quality player down to the Eagles.
If you're an Eagles fan, you are hoping that all of these quarterbacks right. go in the top 10. You are hoping that it's like the 2011 draft, which if you go back and look at the talent in that 2011 draft, at the top 15 picks, I mean, it was just like pro bowler after pro bowler after pro right. bowler. And then you look at the quarterbacks that were drafted, you know, Christian Ponder and Jake Locker and the rest of those guys, Blaine Gabbert, and it was just bust after bust after bust. We'll see if that's what happens in this class. But overall, I mean, with Mahomes, I would agree with the statement that he has the tools, the physical tools. His arm talent is as good as anybody in this class. His accuracy at times is very, very good. I would just be terrified to draft him in the first three rounds with any kind of expectation that he's going to see the field in the first couple of years. Anyone that said that looked at Christian Hackenberg last year and said, oh man, he needs a year. Like this kid needs so much work. And he doesn't have any kind of semblance of how to play in the pocket right now. But hey, you know, Johnny Manziel went in the first round. I thought that was kind of ludicrous too, but here we are.
I was wondering how many episodes of this podcast this year we were going to get into before you mentioned Christian Hackenberg, and we got it today. So that's
actually not too bad. I got it in before you got a Ben Boulware reference in.
That's right. Glad you said his name first in this podcast,
yes,
Boulware. No, but looking at Pat Mahomes, it's another air raid offense, another air raid quarterback.
Yep.
And we've seen guys in the past. Fran, I know you and I have talked about it off air plenty of times. How many of those air raid quarterbacks ever go on to have success in the NFL? Not many.
None. The only one that has had any kind of semblance of success was Case Keenum, who just got benched for another air raid quarterback in Jared Goff, who obviously went number one last year. So we'll see how that'll play out for LA.
A little tangent here for a second. Alex and I were having this talk the other day. Where would Jared Goff stack among these quarterbacks? Would he be the clear-cut number one guy? And you think to yourself, number one overall pick. Why wouldn't he be?
You would think so. It's tough to eliminate the recency bias of knowing what he did in the NFL. But probably. I would think that's how the league would view him if that's what he was viewed at last year ahead of Carson.
All right, so next item here, another quarterback-related item, is that Deshaun Watson from Clemson will do everything at the combine. Seems like this has been the trend of recent years,
yep,
that the quarterbacks do compete in Indy.
That's why I was talking with our friend Joe Dolan from FantasyGuru.com yesterday about that topic, and he had, are the other quarterbacks going to work out? And I was like, I don't see why not. I can't remember the last quarterback that I can think of that was a big name that didn't work out was Geno Smith.
Yeah.
It was the last one I could remember that didn't, and that it was a big deal that he didn't work out. But you go back to Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota did, all the big guys last year did. I know Johnny Manziel did that year. I'm pretty EJ Manuel did, like all those guys that year.
Like Luck did?
Yeah, Luck did too. That's why I'm going back and I couldn't think of what. So I think it was Geno Smith. I think it was Geno Smith's year where he didn't work out.
Well, what's the biggest reason that guys don't work out at the combine?
I think the idea is that, oh well, they don't have any kind of rapport with the receivers, so if guys are dry, they don't want to look bad. But I think now scouts have said and teams have said, guys, we don't care if the ball falls incomplete or not. We want to see how it comes out of your hands. We want to see how your mechanics look. Like, there's a separation there in terms of, no one's charting and saying, oh, man, Jameis Winston completed 17% of his passes in combine drills yesterday. That's not
some
happening.
Some people will chart that, but...
some people that are in training camp with the Philadelphia Eagles on a weekly basis.
Maybe. I was not going to say anything.
From the stands might do that, but here we are.
All right, let's get to a position Eagles fans want to know more about. It's running back. And NFL.com Chad Reuters says that BYU running back Jamal Williams' 40-yard dash time might be one of the most important of any player at the combine. Reuters did a feature on the five running backs with the most improved Indy. Williams was one of them.
I think there's all these guys, and it's kind of like how we talked about with Chris Godwin, anybody where there's any kind of question about their athletic ability and whether or not they have enough athleticism to be a starter at their respective position, it's going to be really important for them to work out. And that's what kind of helps you to say, I look at Jamal Williams, I don't see a guy that has the level of athletic ability that you'd want to be a feature back. Like I see power, I see a guy that can catch the ball, I see a guy that can block. I don't see the vision that I'd want, and my level of athleticism is the question that I have with Jamal Williams. If he were to go and light up the combine, now I'm going back and watching and saying, like, all right, did I miss something on the way back through? And that's what NFL teams would do, the same thing. So I would agree that it is probably one of the more important ones. And you can go to another, Deontay Foreman comes to mind from Texas, who kind of fits that same mold. I think there are a few guys at those skill positions where you want to see how athletic they are in these drills.
Tony Pauline, speaking of Deontay Foreman, says that Foreman is tipping the scales at 235 pounds and has been running in the mid to low 4.5s in the 40-yard dash in workouts leading up to the combine.
And that would be impressive. I still think that I want to see how he does. To me, with running backs, the 40-yard dash is the least impressive of all the combine drills to me for a running back. I want to see short shuttle. I want to see three cone. I want to see even the jumps and see that lower body explosion. So I do want to see how Foreman tests across the board. Same thing with Jamal Williams, across the board in all those drills. But overall, yeah, I mean, that would be impressive. If Deontay Foreman were to go and run well like Williams, that would make me go back and see if I'm missing something there.
Last item here for Draft Buzz, another running back-related item. Graham Barfield tracked how often running backs faced a loaded box, and 67% of Leonard Fournette's runs came across boxes of 8 or more. To put that in perspective, the average... 31%.
And I'd be willing to bet that Deontay Foreman's is like 7%. It doesn't surprise me. Number one, because of how LSU plays. I mean, LSU so often, number one, their quarterback situation has always been bad under with Fournette there. And then two, just the way they play. I mean, they're a heavy personnel team, so it's a lot of, you know, two receiver sets. So it doesn't surprise me that he saw a lot of loaded boxes. But yeah, it gives you a sense of, because everyone points to, with Fournette, everyone points to the Alabama games, and it's like, oh, like how come he never did anything against Alabama? It's like, well, yeah, because they tried to out
Alabama put 11 guys in the box.
They tried to out Alabama every single time that they used it, and it didn't go well because LSU's O-line got out-muscled at the point of attack. But yeah, it doesn't surprise me at all to see that fact.
All right, so that's going to do it for Draft Buzz. Now it's time for Pick Six, six small school products we love.
Now it's time for Pick Six.
So yes, indeed, we're going to go the small school route here. And, you know, we came up with guys. There's guys like Forrest Lamp we talked about in Draft Buzz. Cooper Kupp we could have probably talked about here. Villanova's Tonio Passanio we probably could have gone down. These are some guys that we've talked about you probably know more about. So I took this exercise to learn about some of maybe the hidden gems of the small school class here. So I'll kick things off, and I wanted to go to a position group the Eagles could potentially address upcoming, and I'm going to go with someone who played not too far from here at Kutztown, a Philly native, and that's Jordan Morgan, a guard. He has NFL size, started every game in his career at left tackle. He's projected to move inside in the NFL, but he earned first-team all-conference honors three consecutive years, was named the conference's Offensive Athlete of the Year in 2016, and was a finalist for the Gene Upshaw Award, which is given to the top lineman in D2 play. He was also an All-America selection, and he also graded out well in his performance at the Senior Bowl. So my first guy here, Jordan Morgan, guard from Kutztown.
Yeah, I wrote down after watching him, he needs to continue developing physically, but he looks the part athletically of an NFL offensive lineman, probably best at guard in a zone scheme, like you had mentioned. I love his play personality. He got after defenders at the FCS level. Not ready to start year one, but I do think year two, you probably have a starter at guard.
Alex, Fran?
I'll go next. I'm going to go on the defensive side of the ball, and this is a guy that I saw down at the Shrine game, and it's Florida Atlantic defensive end Trey Hendrickson, because he was a guy I didn't know much going into the week, and then he was just absolutely tearing it up in pass rush drills. The productivity was there with Florida Atlantic. He had 13 and a half sacks in 2015. He had a lot of different moves that he was going after offensive linemen with. And he just looked like he was on a different level from some of the other pass rushers that we saw down there. So I don't know if he's a 4-3 defensive end or if he's an outside linebacker in a 3-4. Whatever he is, I think he's a really talented pass rusher and a guy that's kind of under the radar. So I like Trey Hendrickson a lot.
Yeah, I don't expect him to look great at the combine next week from an athletic standpoint. And I think he'll come in with shorter arms and probably a little bit not the size you'd want. But I do think he's a 4-3 defensive end. Could be something that the Eagles are looking at in that day three range. My first guy, I wanted to go Eric Saubert, the tight end from Drake that you saw, Alex, down at the Shrine game. We saw him late in the week down at the Senior Bowl. I love Eric Saubert, but there's another tight end that I'm really, really intrigued by from a lower level of competition, and that's another guy that you saw, Alex, a receiver in college, was a receiver at the Shrine game, is going to be a receiver at the Combine, but I think he's going to be a tight end at the next level, and that's Shepherd, which is a little university in West Virginia, Shepherd wide receiver, future tight end, Billy Brown, 6'3", 254 pounds. I'm really, really intrigued by this kid. I watched him over the summer, going back to his junior year, and I was enthralled by his athleticism, but also his ball skills. I mean, he catches everything that goes his way. You're obviously projecting, because he's a college receiver, you got to project him to the NFL as a blocker, playing in line with his hand in the ground. Can he do that? But again, he's 254 pounds as a receiver. You don't really see that kind of size, that kind of weight. I do think he's going to be a tight end at the next level, and I think he's got a lot of talent.
The problem for him is it's a stacked tight end class.
That's the number one issue. There's a ton of tight ends in this class, so I think he will fall through the cracks. It's a matter of will he still go in the sixth, seventh round range, and I think that's probably where he fits. But we'll see how he tests. I'm very anxious to see how that goes.
All right, next up, I'm going to go to the defensive side of the ball, edge rusher area, like Alex went, with Keontae Davis. Yep. All right, he was very productive for Chattanooga at the FCS level. 10.5 sacks in 2016, 13.5 the previous year. He got to play against Alabama, so evaluators will be able to see tape against some quality opposition. Had 4 tackles and a half sack against a Crimson Tide. He had the highest placement in the Buck Buchanan Award vote in school history, which is the equivalent of the Heisman for the FCS level. Good size, strong. He doesn't have the explosiveness off the edge, like say like a Vinnie Curry. Like when you watch Vinnie Curry's get off, it's very impressive. Davis doesn't have that, but high motor, fights to the whistle, a guy who will be a day three pick most likely, but someone who could be a productive depth guy for you at the next level.
I see him the same way. When I watched him against Alabama, he did not look out of place. He typically was the left defensive end, so he'd be going up against a right tackle. I don't know if they did this on purpose, if they did it for him, if they did it because they felt like they liked the matchup. They moved him to the right side to face Cam Robinson in that Alabama game, and he did not look out of place at all going up against Cam Robinson. Obviously, Robinson got his share of wins, but Davis, I thought, fought very, very well in that game. So that was a really impressive outing for him, but I agree, he's probably more of a backup at the next level.
All right, guys, for my next player here in pick six, I'm going to go with another guy I saw at the Shrine game. That's Louisiana Lafayette running back Elijah McGuire. He's a guy that we've actually had on this podcast. We had him on a couple weeks ago for an unofficial visit, but a bit on the smaller side. He's listed at around 5'11", 209 pounds, 210 pounds. But I think he can be that change of pace back at the next level. Really productive in his college career at Louisiana Lafayette, over 4,000 yards in his career. He was the 2013 Sun Belt Freshman of the Year. Very shifty, very light on his feet, and he was a guy who throughout the week at Shrine Game practice had people talking. So I really like what I saw from Elijah McGuire. I think he's a guy towards the later rounds of the draft, but I think he could be a steal at the running back position.
And I think he will test very well next week at the Combine as well. I'll round our list off with Lorenzo Jerome, the safety from St. Francis that we saw down at the Senior Bowl, tore it up in the game. He had two picks in the game. He had two picks the week before in the NFLPA game. He's a somewhat local kid, went to St. Francis, was out in Western PA, but originally from Broward County down in South Florida. Undersized, 5'10 and a half, 202 pounds, was a starter at free safety for them for St. Francis, but I think that ultimately what you're looking at is more of a sub-package type of player, a guy that can play as like a nickel or dime safety. The question with him will be, can he physically hold up against the run? You know, I love his instincts. I love his athleticism. He's got good ball skills. The question will be, will he be big enough to hold up to a down-in, down-out role in the NFL? But I like him as a potential third or fourth safety and special teams guy. I really liked his tape. I watched two games last week, and I was really impressed.
So we've tried to discover some under the radar gems, so to speak, six small school prospects to keep an eye on in the draft process. That's going to do it for pick six. Now it's time for our Mr. Relevant, none other than NFL Network's Charles Davis.
It's time for Mr. Relevant.
This week's Mr. Relevant, one of our favorite analysts in the draft game today. He's from NFL Network. You can follow him on Twitter at CFD. Double Deuce, that is none other than the illustrious Charles Davis. Charles, welcome back to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's always great to talk with you guys. You know that. We've forged a pretty good relationship over the years, so thanks for having me, Pat.
Indeed, Charles. Now, Charles will be part of NFL Network's coverage of the Combine, which begins March 3rd and runs through March 6th. You can watch every morning at 9 a.m. So wake up to Charles and company breaking down the top prospects in this year's NFL Scouting Combine. Now, Charles, one of your other jobs, you're an analyst for Fox, so you've seen the Eagles up close and personal. What are your assessment of the team's needs going into draft season? Let's start with the big picture, looking at the Eagles, focusing on the Eagles. What are the team's needs in your estimation?
Well, no particular order, you know, based off of what I saw last year, and I think I got to see you guys fairly late in the year at Cincinnati. It was the last time I saw you for the season, I believe, and Carson Wentz threw it 60 times that day. I mean, wow. And that's not something you want for any quarterback. So, look, in no particular order, they've got to get help at receiver. We know that. I think that they're going to have to make some decisions up front about what the roles are going to be going forward for the offensive line. You know, who's going to fit where, who's going to go here, all of that. But it's not the same priority to me as receiver. I think a lead runner would be a really nice thing to have. They have a lot of guys who can specialize in different roles. Ryan Matthews is a guy that you keep saying he's going to be the guy, yet at the end of the year, I don't think anyone was convinced that he was. Then I flip it over to the defensive front, and you look like you've got everything you want, but I'm not sure everyone played to that level last year. So I'm not sure if that's a huge priority, but I think you're going to want to take a look there. linebacker position, with her Michael Kendricks. What's going on there? I can't quite figure that one out. Absolutely love Jordan Hicks inside. And then, of course, anyone in the secondary. Well, actually, it's anyone. I really think the corners really need a good look out there.
Charles, the first position that you mentioned there was wide receivers, and obviously the fans always love to talk about wide receiver. It's such a flashy position, and certainly the Eagles could build around Carson Wentz. So when you look at the guys towards the top of the list at wide receiver this year, guys like Corey Davis, Mike Williams, even John Ross getting some first-round buzz, how do you kind of evaluate the top of the wide receivers group this year in the draft?
Yeah, that's a funny one, because over the last 2 days I've really been grinding on receivers, and the guys, you know, you mentioned Williams and Davis, and to me, they're very similar physique guys, but they play differently. Because I think Williams is much more, and I hate to categorize guys too much because it's the wrong thing to do, but Williams is going to win just about every jump ball, at least he did at the college level. So that's going to be a big deal for him. I think he showed incredible toughness in the national championship game. You remember early in that game, that hit he took on that inside route, where he was actually trying to get extra yardage, and he stayed up just a tad too long, and I think the safety came over and just about decapitated him. And he was kind of out of it for a while. They weren't sure. Neck hurt, the whole thing. And he came back and made play after play, and I thought they did a great job play calling to isolate him with the corner at Alabama that they could handle, that they could deal with, and he struggled and led to a title for them. So I like him a lot, but I really like Corey Davis. The more I watch Corey Davis on tape at the top of the board, the more I like him. I wish he was going to work out at the combine. I think, if I'm correct, I've heard he's not going to run or work out. Have you guys heard that one? So that I wish I could see, because I'd like to get that stopwatch down on him, try and maybe eliminate some things, because it's the one thing that I really want to get a good look at. But when I watch him make plays, he'll make them short, he'll make them long, he'll make them intermediate, and he does have good run after catch. John Ross is the flyer, but John Ross scares me just a little bit because size. If that's going to be a number one guy I'm taking, I often come back to the Tavon Austin debate. And remember, the Rams moved up. They did. Now, some of that's probably on the Rams because they just never did figure out how to use the guy. But as a general rule, Smurfs are not the guys that I go get at the top of the draft. So let's see what's going to happen with him, because he does a lot of other things. I mean, you guys know, at one point, Washington early in his career started by making him a corner. So we're going to see how that all shakes out for him. So those are guys near the top that I really like. But I'm telling you, the kid out of USC, Juju Smith-Schuster, I can't take my eyes off of him. Now, the tough part for Philadelphia, of course, is coming out of Philadelphia, out of USC with Nelson Agholor. And I think it's one of those hard debates for people. Because if you're the Houston Texans and you look back on passing on Derek Carr when you could have had him because of what happened with David, is that really something that should deter you from doing something? We'll see.
Yeah, it's certainly something, Charles. I know I've heard you say that don't scout the helmet, scout the player. And I think that's certainly something that Eagles fans will have to pay attention to.
It's hard, though, isn't it, Fran? It's really hard.
It always is.
You're appealing to your base as well. And there is part of human nature, and I'll shut up here. Look, human nature, you want people to like what you do. And I'm not saying that's how people draft. But at the same time, are you going to unnecessarily borrow trouble? That's something Philly or other teams who are in that position have to go through. And Houston made that decision, and I think they look back on it and go, you know, maybe we should have gone in that direction. But at the time, I think we all understood it.
Charles, you mentioned the need for kind of a lead ball carrier, and really at the top of this draft, there are the two names that everybody's talking about, and it seems pretty divisive in the media about who's the number one guy. Is it Leonard Fournette from LSU? Is it Dalvin Cook from Florida State? Where do you fall on the fence? Obviously, you can like both guys, but who to you is the lead guy in this class?
I think Fournette's the lead guy. I'm an old school running back guy, and I evaluate the guy that I'm going to put the ball in his chest. And what's he going to give me after that? And I think Fournette is built for it. You know, he's the guy to give you the full combo of everything in terms of running the ball. The problem he has is, in today's NFL, we have to do a little bit more of a forecast on catching the ball, running routes, doing all of those things. I think he can do those things. In fact, I think he's better equipped to do it than Adrian Peterson was coming out of college. And, you know, whether that deterred some people at the top, I think it was more that late deal about whether he had a collarbone, shoulder problem, all that took people, kept people from drafting him even higher. But as a pure runner, I like him. The only thing about these big running backs like a Fournette is they seem to catch those weird ones, right? That little tweak of the ankle, right? The thigh pad shifts and he gets a deep thigh bruise and he's down for a little while, that sort of deal. Dalvin Cook at Florida State is today's NFL running back. Can run inside, can run outside, catch the football. You know, you can do a bunch of things with him. So it's, you know, 6 one way, half dozen another. I lean a little bit towards Fournette. He's my guy. But if you're going to tell me I've got to take Dalvin Cook, there will be zero tears shed at the top of the draft.
Charles, is there a later round running back? And I don't need to go like 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th round, maybe a day 2 type of guy, because you mentioned the Eagles might need to find a lead runner to be the bell cow in this Doug Pearson, Frank Reich offense. Is there a guy who's not in that upper echelon tier that the Eagles might be able to get on day 2 who could maybe from day 1 or in a year or two be that guy?
Don't put this on me like it's a homer call, but I think the Kamara kid from Tennessee is a stud. I know that he hasn't been the lead guy for very long there, but I just think that he's got everything. I think he's a terrific back that probably you'll get as a second-round guy, even though I would have a first-round grade on him. Another guy that I would look at would be Wayne Gallman at Clemson. He reminds me a little bit of Devontae Freeman in this way. He plays really hard every snap. And I see it, and I remember when Devontae Freeman came out. I'm not sure how you guys had it, but I remember I looked at my notes and I put him down as he is a jack of all trades. I'm not sure what his elite mastery is. I'm not sure about that. He runs hard. He blocks hard. He catches the ball. His passion for the game is off the charts. But I wasn't sure that I had him out there as like, that's the guy to go get. So that was a little bit of, that was a miss for me in terms of that. I liked him, but I wasn't quite sure. Okay, missed on that one. Gallman's a guy that I think is going to be a little bit better going forward than even he was as a player at Clemson. And one of the things we always have to keep in mind with these kids nowadays, when they're in that junior year, that year where they're draft eligible, sometimes they're not quite the same as they were before because they start to play to protect themselves a little bit. I'm not sure that was the case with Gallman. I had a couple people tell me that. But at the same time, I like him a bunch. So he'd be a guy that I'd look at in that range. And you're right, I'm not trying to go too deep into this whole thing. But I think you guys saw the Kareem Hunt kid at Toledo. I thought he was pretty good, although I thought he might have been a little light when he was at the Senior Bowl. But I thought he could stand to, you know, add a few pounds back on.
And Charles, at the cornerback position, a lot of interesting names at the top, but it also seems to be a pretty deep group as well. But when you're talking about corners, what are you looking for at the combine specifically? What drills really stand out at the cornerback position in your mind?
I love when they actually get on the field and they have them do the back pedal and they break them one way or the other and they send them out for the passes. And look, they're going to do the four cones. They're going to do all the shuttles, and you want to see that change of direction and quickness and sharpness and cuts where it's fluid, where it's not stop, start, stop, stop, start, start. None of that. You want to see that fluidity throughout. So those things are fun to watch and look at, more so than the 40, although the 40 is going to tell me if I'm going to have a guy, if I'm a big man-to-man guy, can he run if someone takes him upfield? I've got to know that, too, with them. But I like all those types of drills, especially when they're going and playing the ball in the air and, you know, you can't anticipate when the guy is going to break you. Just to see how fluid and smooth guys are doing those things.
Charles, I want to stay kind of at the cornerback position with this. My last question for you is a guy that coming out of high school was the number one corner in the country out of North Jersey. Went to the University of Michigan, played that first year at corner. Then they moved him to safety. This year he plays linebacker. Now he's the most polarizing prospect in this draft, I would imagine, Jabril Peppers. You've played DB in college. Do you view Jabril Peppers as a DB? Do you view him as a linebacker? What is your ultimate landing spot for Peppers right now as you see him at this point in the process?
You know, Fran, I think that he has actually come along at the best possible time for himself in terms of how the NFL is doing things with their defensive backs. Because you remember those years gone by when we were really more solid in roles? then I think he really would have been in a little bit more trouble because of the aspect that you talked about. Where are we going to play him? What are we going to do with him? Well, now I think more and more teams are emphasizing what you can do and de-emphasizing what you can't do. And I wouldn't be surprised at all to see a team that has really good creative defensive coaches that draft this kid and play him in different spots depending on down and distance. He's going to be like a Tyrann Mathieu type. Remember, we all, you know, when Mathieu got drafted and the Cardinals announced on draft day they're going to play him at safety, I think all of us blanched a little, like, what? He's kind of small, what have you. But the Cardinals saw the future, which was we're not pounding the ball inside like we used to, where Bullet Bob Sanders had to be in there and throw his body around. We're doing a lot more things offensively where we'll move this guy where he'll play against the slot, he'll play outside as a corner, he'll play back deep as a safety, and he did all those things at LSU. I think with Michigan doing what they've done with Peppers, we're going to find defensive coaches that do the same thing. And you guys know the Cardinals have probably done as good a job with their hybridization of guys, with Deion Buchanan, with Tony Jefferson, with Tyrann Mathieu. But more and more are doing that now, and we're going to see more and more of that. So I think down and distance is going to determine what he's going to do more than anything else.
Charles, Fran mentioned how you're a former volunteer defensive back in your own right. Can you use that experience to break down the top corners in this year's draft class? It's going to be a position the Eagles must address with Leos McKelvin being released and Nolan Carroll set to become a free agent. In your estimation, how would you break down the top tier of corners in this draft class? Because it looks like it's going to be a very good group for the Eagles to choose from.
It is going to be a good group, and it's going to be a group that's going to have a few fights in some of the draft rooms, I think. Do you like the Lattimore kid from Ohio State? Do you like the Humphrey kid? And this is just between us, so don't tell anyone. I played against his dad in college. You know, when you see kids come along and you played against their dad in college, that means you spend a quiet night in a dark room going, my God, where's it all gone? Okay? So that's where I am with him. But I think he's a heck of a player. I think the Sidney Jones kid out of Washington is another really good player. I'm in love with Desmond King at Iowa, but not as a corner. I want to move him to safety and make him a playmaker back there because I am a little concerned about his speed and quickness, but I love his instincts. And I think he'll be better served there. The Tabor kid from Florida, I think, is a really good player. But I like Lattimore, I like Humphrey, and I like Sidney Jones before I like Tabor.
All right, Charles Davis from NFL Network. Again, he will help provide comprehensive coverage of the NFL Scouting Combine beginning on Friday, March 3rd, and you can follow him on Twitter at CFD22. Charles, you're one of the best in the business. We can't thank you enough for joining us here on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. Thanks, as always, Charles. Just truly one of the best analysts, but best people in the entire business. I think we can all agree on that one.
Absolutely.
For certain.
He's the best.
All right, it's time for our unofficial visit. Now, Fran, you got into the tight ends during the pick six segment. You mentioned this player who we're going to feature here. So you didn't go with Eric Saubert from Drake in the pick six, but Alex, you had a chance to catch up with him at the Shrine Game.
Yeah, but Fran, that was a nice tease to get us into this next part of the podcast here. So nice
season,
job.
Season podcast
nice,
veteran.
Nice job bringing up Saubert. But here we are, an unofficial visit. And what we saw down at the Shrine Game was a great pass catcher. It's come so natural to him, and that's what we talked about in the interview, how it's always come natural to him. But what he's really working on here in the rest of the draft process is becoming a more complete player, which I think a lot of scouts want to see from him. So that's really what we got into in our interview.
The unofficial visit.
All right, I'm here with tight end Eric Saubert out of Drake. Eric, you've had a couple of impressive practices here to start this week. What's some of the feedback that you've gotten from the coaches to this point?
I think just work on blocking still. That's huge for me. I've honed my receiving game, but I got a lot of work to do in that area. So that's what I've been working on. There's a lot of new things I'm learning already. Just these first couple days that were different from college. So working on honing those skills, applying what the coaches tell me, you know.
Has pass catching kind of always been something that's come easy to you?
Yeah, it's come natural. But again, I put in a lot of work in that area too. So that's what I do with my game. I just like to work on every aspect. So
What's it like for you to be around some of the players from maybe some bigger programs, but seeing how you kind of fit in with them and how you kind of match up to their talent?
Yeah, I mean, it's an awesome opportunity for me coming from a small school. So I'm just out here trying to show that I belong. I know I do. So just showing everyone else, it's huge for me. It's exciting.
What's something, maybe one part of your game that you want to improve upon here as we get closer and closer towards the draft?
Yeah, once again, I want to show that I'm a physical player and, you know, not afraid to get at it in the run, get after it in the run game. So that's what I'm here to show. I'm here to show I can make plays in the pass game too, and that I'm a full player. You know, I'm not just a one-trick pony.
My last question for you, Eric. When this week is over, what do you have hoped to have accomplished? Besides just, you know, proving that you're not just a one-trick pony, but is there anything else that you want to say that you accomplished down here at the Shrine Game?
I want to walk away and say, you know, I gave everything I had, but also I dominated my competition. So I'm going to get after it every play. I'm excited to compete, excited to be here.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
All right, time for a little draft mailbag action. Some great questions from you guys on Twitter, as always. Thanks for sending them in. And Fran likes to turn it into a segment for himself, where if there's a question that's not good for the podcast, he's like, I'll just answer it myself.
If you get 20 questions, I don't want to alienate anybody. I want to get, you know, answer some on Twitter, and we pull the rest of the best ones for here.
All right, let's get into them. The first one comes from Jackson, @Jackson_Raheem. His Journey to Draft podcast question is, do you think the Eagles should pass on a running back and a receiver in the first round to select a cornerback? And if so, which one? I think we all know what the answer is going to be. Don't mess around. Just take the best player.
Yeah.
Don't think of
that stamp, the best player available stamp, stamp on the question.
You know, because teams are going to evaluate the prospects differently. You might say, okay, you know, there's three great receivers at the top here, John Ross, you know, Corey Davis, and Mike Williams. Well, teams might see different fits for these players and might say this guy might be worth a first round selection. This guy might not be. Same with cornerback. You know, you might say, well, they've got, you know, T. Saber and all these different guys, but it's like Marcus Lattimore. We go on and on. Maybe not everyone's going to be a scheme fit for the Eagles. And you don't want to bank on, oh, I'll get this guy later on. It may not happen.
No, you want to get the best players you can. You take value into effect, and that certainly could be a factor. But to me, if I'm taking a quarterback, okay, we'll go around with it. Which corner do you like? I love Tre'Davious White. That's my guy. Mm-hmm. We'll see where he ends up, because it's all over the place right now. I think the combine will kind of clear that up. Not necessarily how he's going to test, but you know, once the media starts mingling with the scouts and GMs and decision makers, you start to get a feel for. We'll start to see, you know, Mike Mayock and Daniel Jeremiah and Mel Kiper. They all have, you know, Tre'Davious White as a top 20 pick. Now everyone will kind of see, okay, this is kind of where he's going to slot in this draft. I think White is one of the best corners, and to me, he's probably my number one corner overall in this group.
Look, I think obviously you go best player available, but the way that I kind of feel about this is the Eagles front office and the coaching staff has talked so much about we want to build around Carson Wentz. That's what the goal is for this offseason. They got him, you know, you got the quarterback last year. Now you have to build around him. So if you can get a stud wide receiver, if it's in the first round of the draft, that you can pair up with him, you know, guys that are 23, 22 years old, and just say, okay, you know, he's going to be your number one for the next 7 to 10 years, whatever it is, that's a little bit of an intriguing prospect to me. So I certainly understand if there's a great cornerback there that you have rated very high and he's your best player, you probably take him. But the idea of pairing up Carson Wentz with if a Corey Davis or Mike Williams or even John Ross, who, you know, just seems like he just keeps rising up the rankings, if those guys are there and you have the opportunity to pair them up with Carson Wentz, I think that's very enticing.
Well, Corey Davis to me, I think he's a top five player in the draft for me. So if Corey Davis is there, I think that's hard to pass up on.
He's probably going to be your highest rated player at that point.
He might be, yeah, exactly. If he gets to it and Corey Davis is your highest rated player, you pull the trigger, you take the receiver.
Of course. Yeah. All right, next question comes from @JB1DD on Twitter. If Benny Logan isn't re-signed, this means we're going to jinx ourselves. He'll probably be re-signed in the next,
next hour before,
yeah, before we post the podcast. Who could step in to help Bo Allen fill that gap? And the player who comes to mind, Destiny Vio. You know, if the Eagles were to lose Benny Logan, quite honestly, it's a big hole. You know,
it definitely is.
And Logan is the type of guy, he was a third-round pick, you know, day two selection, homegrown player you've drafted, you developed. He's been a very good starter for you, compliments Fletcher Cox very well. You saw what he meant to the team when he was off the field this season. you don't want to have another hole to fill in free agency and the draft. But if the Eagles decide that they just can't make the investment there, if the numbers don't work out, if Benny Logan gets blown away with a contract offer, you know, Bo Allen's going to be there, but Destiny Vio would be the guy who made the 53-man roster as a rookie free agent out of Washington State, has first career sack in that Monday night primetime win over the Chicago Bears. Yep. He would be the guy right off the bat for me.
Yeah, I think he's definitely a name to keep an eye on. And another name is Azeez Shittu, who spent the whole year on the Eagles practice squad out of Stanford. And if you get him into the active lineup last year, it's almost like getting another draft pick this year. But he had the year with you last year to obviously learn the defense and get to know his teammates and all those kinds of things. So, but he's a player who didn't see any action for the team last year. But he could be the guy. So I think Destiny Vial, certainly a name to keep an eye on, but Azeez Shittu is as well.
Yeah, and if you're looking at the draft and all, are there any mid-round D-tackles that could come in and kind of play a role there? I watched a guy recently, Elijah Qualls from Washington, 6'1", 321 pounds. I was expecting at that frame for more of like a gap-plugging nose tackle. The kid moves pretty well. I think he's going to surprise some people at the combine. Was a high school running back that ran for 1,800 yards in his career, and ran for 10 touchdowns as a senior. So he's got some movement to him. I saw him chase down Christian McCaffrey on a screen play, and you kind of saw that athleticism. So he's an option. Some people are excited about Caleb Brantley from Florida in that kind of range, Montrevious Adams, Jaleel Johnson we saw in Iowa down at the Senior Bowl. He's got some ability as well. So those would be some mid-round tackles you would keep an eye on.
Another name that stood out to me looking at the draft for that position, what about a guy like Tanzel Smart? Who we also saw down at the Senior Bowl. Is he a guy who fits into what Jim Schwartz does?
Yeah, I think we saw that disruptive ability constantly down there. The thing with him is going to be his size. It's not a great Senior Bowl, or it's not a great defensive tackle class. So the fact that he went to the Senior Bowl and stood out was very, very big for his stock.
All right, next question comes from at AFuente710. If Alex McAllister adds 20 to 30 pounds over the offseason, could he be a contributor next year?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen Alex. I don't know if he put on 20, 30 pounds. I think it's a lot. That's a lot of LBs. But, no, I mean, look, McAllister, to me, the biggest thing with him was not necessarily the weight. The weight was big. He did need to put on weight and get stronger. But to me, the biggest thing with him was, and I remember talking with him about this in the summer, was just developing more pass rush moves. He couldn't just win with speed on the outside. He had to be able to work with his hands and know how to counter once he was initially blocked on the outside. So that'll be the biggest thing for him this summer when he goes to play, not just in training camp, but also in preseason games, is prove that he had developed his hands a little bit more as a pass rusher.
But could he be still as fast with that added weight? That's going to be the other big question,
That
you have to see. So certainly you expect the Eagles to work the defensive end position to some extent this offseason, and you have to factor in McAllister to some extent. How much, I don't know. You certainly, if there's a top-tier edge rusher that becomes available, you got to go after him. But Alex McAllister will have a shot for playing time this season. Next question comes from at Game Roller B. Besides off-the-field questions, what is preventing Alabama's Tim Williams from being a top 15 pick? He had a misdemeanor gun charge during his time with the Crimson Tide. So that's the off-the-field stuff that Game Roller B is referring to.
I mean, he is one of the most explosive defenders in this draft. You see his first step. You see his bend. You see his anticipation. I mean, he can win off the ball every single play. The question with him is he's got exactly two starts in his career. Even when they were in nickel on base down. So you think back to the Eagles and it's first and 10. They would still be in first and 10. They would still be in nickel. Alabama was the same way. He was not on the field on nickel on first and 10, so he wasn't a starter on nickel. He really only played for them. In most cases, I watched a lot of last year, 2015, and I've watched two games so far from this year. He was not on the field until it was really pass only down. So, yeah, there were times, I think, from what I've heard, he has gotten better against the run as the year went on this year. But I think it's very, very telling that Nick Saban, who knows a couple things, didn't really use him in anything other than those pass first situations. That's going to be a big thing for him, is proving that he can defend the run. He's 245, listed 245. We'll see what he comes in at in Indianapolis. But that's the big thing that he's got to climb as well and prove to teams.
All right, our last question comes from at the Mocking Jake. The Eagles have said they are targeting wide receivers with a great quick release. Who are some of those guys? Could Taywan Taylor be one of them?
I know you like Taywan Taylor a little bit. I certainly like him as well. but thinking of kind of those quick twitch wide receivers, obviously we've talked about John Ross a million times on this podcast already, so we should probably just name this episode the John Ross episode. Yeah. Of the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. But there's a few of those guys. Taywan Taylor, I know, Fran, he's a guy that you like a lot.
Big fan of Taywan Taylor. I like Carlos Henderson from Louisiana Tech a lot. He's able to get off the ball, and he can get vertical as well. Tony Pauline said that he could break into that 4.3 range as well as a 40-yard dash runner. I think you look down the list, I think there are some guys that can stretch the field in this draft. You know, D.D. Westbrook is one guy. I think obviously you can look at Ardarius Stewart from Alabama, a player I just broke down on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. We mentioned Kermit Winfield, but then also a guy like from West Virginia, Shelton Gibson, who's you know, considered to be a 4.3 kind of guy, certainly brings that vertical element to an offense.
All right, certainly a lot of options for the Eagles at wide receiver in this draft class, but again, doesn't mean you mess around and wait till later in the draft. Oh, we can get a guy in the third round, the fourth round. If you have a top target available, go pull the trigger. That's going to do it for us here on this edition of the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. Next week's episode, a complete preview of the NFL Scouting Combine. Fran Duffy and I will be in Indianapolis to provide complete coverage, while Alex Smith will be holding down the fort here in Philadelphia. So thank you all for listening and subscribing and leaving comments, whether it's on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you consume podcasts. That's going to do it for this episode. We'll be back next week.